Welcome to PM Lessons Learned, a podcast for project managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Increase your PM knowledge, build business relationships, increase your effectiveness, increase your marketability, gain professional support. Join our group and take part in our conference calls. Details at pmlessonslearned.com.
Hello, everyone. This is Henry Will, welcoming you to another PMLessonsLearned.com conference call. Believe it or not, this is going to be podcast number 68. That's right. 68 podcasts, and we just celebrated our three-year anniversary on May 18th, our first podcast. Our first conference call was on May 18th, 2006. And today is May 21st, 2009. So we've been in existence for just over 3 years since the first call. Of course, we started about a month or so before that with the group and setting it up. But I wanted to thank you all for joining us and welcome you to partake of our group as much as you would like to take advantage of all of our special things that we offer to project managers and those studying for the PMP exam. As you might know, if you look at our site, you'll see at the top is the key values and reasons, and I guess you could say that's our vision for our group that was established back then in 2006 and is still true today. Just recently, I received an email from somebody that did their studying for the PMP test by listening into all of our past podcasts, which are available in the archives area of our site. She passed her test, and she was so happy about it because she tuned into Dana Safford's call at the beginning of this month when he talked about the brain dump method of taking all the calculations and everything that you use in the exam and taking them and writing them all down on a piece of paper before you start your PMP exam. She was so happy to get that information just about a week before she was to take her test, and she said that really helped her a lot, along with all the other studying. You'll see hers and the testimonies of many other people about this group on our testimonies page. Again, that link is on our website on the left-hand side. And there is a presentation for tonight's call. You can find that by going to the files area. And the way that you can get there is described on the link that's on the left-hand side of our website that says files and presentations. That link will take you to a page with some directions of how to download the files off of our Yahoo group. You'll have to be a member of the Yahoo group. The Yahoo group is free membership. As a matter of fact, everything that we do is all a high value, but of no cost to you. If you look at our website on the left-hand side, you'll see that link at the top that says, "What's in it for me? Our value to you." And you'll see the description of some of the things that we provide to the people that follow all of our conference calls and our email lists. We're also available on LinkedIn. We have two groups on LinkedIn, our PM Lessons Learn group, and also our PM Job Shop group, where we post jobs and have discussions about project management topics having to do with your career. So one thing that I will mention this evening, and unfortunately for those of you that are listening by podcast, unless you're subscribed to our Yahoo group, you might be finding about this after the fact, but we are having a special call next week. Today is the 21st of May. On the 28th of May, we're having a special call open to all of our members. We're going to be discussing some of the new ideas we come up for the group. We're going to continue all the great things that we're offering, but we're hoping to offer some new programs for some of the people in our group. I'm going to have some of the board members speaking about those, and we're going to also open things to questions and answers. And, of course, if you want to contact us ahead of time with any questions about the groups or if you want to suggest anything, you could use the Contact Us link on our website. So I don't want to delay our presentation any more than I already have. Tonight we're having a speaker of great distinction within project management. Frank Salatis is the president of Project Imagineers Incorporated. It's a PM consulting firm. He's an author and a national speaker. As a matter of fact, I've been tracking him around this past week as he's been in different locations doing his speaking engagements this week and last and getting the presentation together and everything for everybody. He is also a member, of course, of the Project Management Institute, and he was also awarded with the highest honor in Project Management Institute, the Lynn Stuckenbrook Person of the Year Award in 2006. Frank is also the person that started the International Project Management Day, and I asked him to speak a little bit about that this evening at the end of his presentation, so you'll see slides, and he'll be discussing that a bit at the end. He's also been involved with the New York chapter as the president, and he's also, like I mentioned before, an author, and he's published on the allpm.com website as well. You'll see his material in other places as well. Frank is going to be speaking to us tonight on a subject that was selected from our membership. For those of you that are in the Yahoo group, you'll see every once in a while we poll our members when we get a speaker on that has several topics to choose from. And the vote that won for the topic of tonight's call, drum roll please, is team building and influencing skills for leaders. So thank you very much, Frank, for your dedication to the project management field. Thank you very much for your dedication to the profession and for volunteering your time on tonight's call.
Okay, Henry, thanks a lot. Glad to be here. Just want to let you know that this presentation is actually fairly lengthy, so I'm going to be cutting it down quite a bit. A lot of the files, a lot of the slides are fairly self-explanatory, so you know, I'll be hitting on some key points as we go through the discussion. So I'm not really sure how much time is allocated, but I'm figuring about a half an hour to 40 minutes.
Frank, you can feel free to take as much time as you feel the subject warrants, because we've had some of our calls going for an hour and a half lately when the subject is very lengthy. And, you know, feel free to take whatever you feel is necessary to cover the topic. Again, our membership voted for it, so I'm sure that they feel it's important enough for you to cover it, you know, in full. So,
okay, well, I'll do my best on that. The topic, those of you that have the slides, the first page is the title page, which says Team Building, Influencing, and Leadership. And I had been giving this presentation in several different places. I actually created it back in 2006 when I was a speaker at the PMI Leadership Institute meeting, and I actually do workshops at each of those meetings for the past, I don't know how many years. I actually just attended the PMI Leadership meeting in Amsterdam this past weekend. It was basically Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and I did a presentation over there called, the title was Strategies for Developing Component Leaders. And that particular presentation was about personal self-development. The subtopic on that was development was not an option. And the idea behind that presentation was that we are all personally responsible for developing and then actually implementing a personal development plan to improve our skills, especially in the areas of leadership. This presentation, Team Building, Influencing, Leadership, the idea behind this is that any successful project manager has to do a few things. One is you have to build your team to be a high-performance team, that you are going to have to use a great deal of influencing in order to get things done, since there's lots of competition with other projects, and we sometimes have to struggle to get the resources that we need, and also priorities seem to shift and change quite a bit in any organization. And that the project manager is very specifically the leader of a team and is required to motivate their team members to achieve the results that they're looking for. So it seems like kind of a natural fit to have team building, influencing, and leadership coming together under one presentation. The second slide that's up is a quote that I actually picked up from Dr. Harold Kirzner, and I actually do a fair amount of work with Dr. Kirzner. He and I have recently completed a three-book series. There's actually going to be six books in the series, but three books are completed, and will be published by John Wiley. The first book is entitled Value-Driven Project Management. The second one is What Executives Need to Know About Project Management. And the third book is What Functional Managers Need to Know About Project Management. And these are relatively short books that are designed to provide fairly quick information summary format with a some type of a slide plus a narrative description with a lot of charts and information to make the information very useful, more kind of on a practical level from those three different perspectives. The value-driven book focuses on understanding that project success is certainly a lot more than on time, within budget, according to specs or scope, and also that in some cases the project that you work on does not achieve its true value until many years after the project is completed. And so we have to kind of take a look at some of the other aspects of project success as it relates to value. So anyway, those are three books that are coming out. I just had another book published earlier by John Wiley and Sons, and the name of that book is called Bringing the PMBOK Guide to Life, which was just basically published and is available now. The idea behind that book is to take the elements of the PMBOK, and the PMBOK basically is a standard and not necessarily the most exciting book that you would want to read. And what I do is develop some ideas and some suggestions on how to actually take the principles and practices and the process in the PMBOK and actually use them in a project practical sense. So I've been busy writing books. I also write articles for All PM newsletter. All PM is a project management portal. The location is www.allpm.com, and I issue the monthly newsletter, and my topic, my monthly column, is entitled Positive Leadership in Project Management. This quote I did get from Dr. Kirzner. It says, "The really nice thing about not planning is that failure will then come as a complete surprise rather than being preceded by long periods of worry and depression." The idea behind that is that, you know, there is, it's kind of a sarcastic comment made by Kirzner. The bottom line being is that we really should be planning so that we can actually get an idea of what the future would be like. But we do have a lot of people that don't want to plan and therefore are not subjected.
Still there, Frank? Folks, I guess maybe we're having some technical difficulties. I'm going to try calling Frank's cell phone. Are there other people still on the call?
Yeah, Dana's still here, so he probably doesn't know he's been disconnected then.
Yeah, let me try calling him.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe text him or something. Yeah. He's probably still talking, not even realizing that.
I know I'd be.
Yeah.
Henry, hello, can you hear me? Hello, Henry? Anybody on the line?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now, Frank. Yeah.
Okay,
I think Henry's off trying to call you on your cell phone or something.
Yeah, the call just dropped in mid sentence, but I'm back. Okay. Well, anyway, moving forward, the next slide, session objectives that we'll talk about, identify factors that influence you and how we influence other people. Identify some skills for developing effective project teams. A project team certainly is an important thing to develop, and we need to come up with plans and methods to create those high-performance teams. Techniques to improve your effectiveness when influencing people and attempting to gain commitment. We have to get buy-in from people, and sometimes that's a struggle, especially in an environment where we're competing with other project managers for the same resources. And also describe some communication skills that will help us improve the way we communicate and also improve our teamwork. So those are some of the objectives that we'll attempt to cover with this presentation this evening. Next slide, where it says acknowledgement. The important thing about acknowledgement is that it actually is a very useful tool for influencing people. Now, there is a book, it's called The Power of Acknowledgement, written by Judy Umlis, who works for IIL, the International Institute for Learning. And she wrote a book called The Power of Acknowledgement, and there are seven principles of acknowledgement that she talks about. The one that is, to me, kind of prevalent and most important, in especially in the project management environment, is this principle number one, that the world is full of people who deserve to be acknowledged. The issue here is that a lot of people deserve to be acknowledged, but unfortunately, most people don't take the time to actually deliver a sincere acknowledgement. And by giving a sincere acknowledgement is a very, very effective way of actually working with people and influencing people and improving a relationship. So it says there, acknowledge someone near you and also acknowledge someone you are jealous of. One of the major issues that we have in projects that we work on and even in the work environment in general is that there are people that we may not get along very well with, that we might struggle and maybe have some arguments or confrontations with, and people that for whatever reason we don't care for or are jealous of. A lot of those barriers can be broken down by getting past some of those behaviors and some of those feelings and those emotions and focus on things that that particular person actually does that might be helpful or useful to the organization. A most difficult thing to do is to actually come up to someone that you are having an issue with or maybe don't care very much for and actually tell them that they did a good job, if you believe that they did a good job, and it does break some of those barriers down. I've even had a personal experience with that myself in dealing with a person that, to be honest with you, I was not at all happy with, did not care to work for this person, and had some very, very strong feelings for this person. We were actually put on a project together, and I decided that rather than spend a lot of time arguing and dealing with this person on that level, that I would set some expectations about how we would work together to complete this project. And I drew up some expectations and explained them to the person, and the person said, you know what, I agree. I will follow those expectations. And basically, the four or five different items that I wrote down that we agreed to helped us stay on track with the project, and at the end of the project, it came out very successful, and I actually wrote an acknowledgement and sent the acknowledgement to the CEO of the company and CC'd this person. And that basically just changed a lot of things in the way we operate. I realized that he had quite a bit of talent and knowledge about a certain subject, and if we can get past some of the behavioral issues that we sometimes deal with, that there's quite a bit of opportunity out there. And while I won't say that we are best friends, I will say that the relationship has changed significantly and that he and I have actually become resources to each other. So, you know, taking the time to actually issue an acknowledgement has a tremendous influence on people and will allow people to really see things from a completely different perspective. So I highly recommend that you try. It's not easy to acknowledge people that you're having, you know, some strained relationships with, but it is well worth the effort to look into that. The next slide I have up is Newton's first law. It says a body in motion stays in motion. And then I have Frank's corollary to Newton's first law, which is a leader in motion stays in motion, and a business unit or component in motion stays in motion. One of the biggest challenges of the project manager is to get your project moving forward. And then once you're moving forward, it'll take on some momentum and keep moving forward. If you are a leader, once they get going with certain things and people see that you're making progress, they'll want to tag on. So a leader in motion will stay in motion. If you are a leader and you're moving a business or a project or a component in PMI forward, okay, once you've established some momentum, it actually becomes kind of difficult to slow down, and you can accomplish an awful lot. So the idea is to get this attitude of get into motion, find things to change, look for new opportunities, new skills to learn and things like that, but continuously stay in motion, and amazing things can happen. The next slide is influence in the environment. Now, this is kind of an interesting thing. It says we are all influenced by people, places, events, and situations at all times. Sometimes we are affected more or less by these things, but we are continually being influenced by what happens around us. Whether we are being influenced by an individual, by a change in the organization structure, by the economy, by another person on the team, by a customer's request, by a challenge that we've been given. We're influenced at all times, and we should be aware that of these things that are happening around us will impact our behaviors and how we actually work with and influence other people. So we have to be constantly aware of the environment in which we work. Now, this next slide here, the reality check, answer this question. In the work environment, what motivates you? Now, the way this presentation is set up is more like a workshop where the question would be placed up in front of people, and we would take a few minutes to talk about what motivates the people. And then I would go to the next slide, which would indicate some of the areas of motivation. So I'm not sure.
See if anybody's interested in chiming in on that.
Well, that's what I'm going to ask. Before we move on to that next slide, I'd be interested in what are some of the things that actually motivate you in your work environment, in your project environment, if you want to share any of that information.
Folks on the call, you're going to have to press star 6 in order for us to hear you. And then you'll need to do star 6 to mute again, but don't be shy now.
All right, so what motivates me is a challenging project and the desire to deliver for my client.
Okay, the challenge, the desire to deliver for your client, challenging projects. Okay, those are things that motivate you personally. Anyone else, anything that that really gets you excited, wants to make you move forward?
Yeah, this is Dana. Learning new things and learning new processes, learning new ways to do the same thing and recycling various processes is what gets me going.
Okay, looking for new ways to do something, trying something new. Okay, what else? Anything else out there that would motivate you to kind of, you know, go to the next level, next step? Okay, well, let's take a look at the next slide there. The next slide, what motivates you and studies show, and these kind of line up a little bit with what the feedback we just got was, a challenging job, okay, achievement of goals and objectives. I think that a lot of people feel pretty good when they achieve something, when some goal is achieved, and it really doesn't matter where you're at, if you're doing something at home, if you're doing something at work, when you complete something and you feel good about it, you actually want to show it off. You want to show it to other people. It makes you feel pretty good. Some people are motivated by getting more responsibility, increasing their responsibility, maybe to move forward and advance their position. Growth, learning new things, advancement, maybe a promotion. Enjoyment of the work and also earned recognition. A lot of people are motivated by absolute sincere recognition of the work that they do. So these are some of the things that that studies show actually motivate people. And if you'll notice, a lot of these motivation items here are things, if you're familiar with the PMP exam and have taken recently, that some of these are the motivating factors that are listed by Frederick Hertzberg in his hygiene theory. Now, the next slide here, the top 6 requirements of the work environment, a different study was conducted to find out, you know, just what are the requirements. Now, I have requirements highlighted in red for a specific reason. In order for the work environment to be a successful work environment where people feel good and they want to get work done, there are certain things that need to happen. Number one is appreciation for work well done, that people get some kind of a recognition for that work. Number two, possibility for promotion, that if I do this kind of work, if I'm displaying this behavior, that I will potentially get a promotion. The next one is feeling in about things. In the work environment, people are much more comfortable, and this usually happens in smaller organizations rather than larger organizations, that they kind of know what's going on. They know what's kind of around the corner, what's happening with the company, where there might be changes in strategic direction, that they're getting asked for their input. So they feel like they belong to the organization. So feeling in is very important. Another one would be job security. A lot of people require and want a sense of some job security, that they're not going to be looking over their shoulder every 5 minutes about some change that is going to take place. Understanding that in today's environment, the economy makes that somewhat difficult, it is still something that people feel is essential for your work environment to be fairly comfortable and stable. Help with personal problems. Kind of an interesting thing here. But many people, especially today, are dealing with not only the job itself, but a number of other responsibilities on the job and off the job. And occasionally they get overwhelmed. And most of us people have actually experienced the working of many more than 40 hours a week, working weekends, lots of demands from the boss, fair amounts of stress, plus this stress associated with trying to balance your home life, which is really kind of an important part of the project manager's life. And therefore, occasionally, sometimes a problem develops. We're not suggesting here that project managers are experts and psychiatrists and psychologists, but that a person that is running into an issue might be able to go to an HR department or someone to talk to and maybe work out some solutions. And number six is good wages, compensation. Other things that are requirements, interesting work, the loyalty of management towards workers, which means that there's some respect for the work that that workers do and that they're treated as people. If there's going to be discipline, that the discipline would be tactful, would be understanding, would be useful, it would be handled correctly, and it would be more constructive than destructive in terms of criticism. And also, just a basic good working environment. Just to stay on this for a second, if you're interested, there is a book that provides a little bit more insight into the work environment. The book is called Creativity for Leaders, and the author is Gary Fellers, F-E-L-L-E-R-S, Fellers. And the book Creativity for Leaders, he talks about something called the PNR. PNR meaning positive to negative ratio. And in his book, he suggests that the PNR, the positive to negative ratio, is 8-2, which means that in any work environment, that there should be 8 positive type situations to every 2 negatives. And he explains that although positive is good, that some negative should be expected and some negative is actually useful to help you solve problems and move forward to the next level so that you continue forward. In an environment where you have a situation where the ratio is 15-0, he refers to that as a facade, in which no one is really telling the truth, that most people are hiding how they really feel, and that in an environment like that with the facade of only positives and no negatives, it's not really reality and the organization really doesn't move forward effectively. So think about the positive to negative ratio in your organization and what can you do to improve that so that there is a reasonably balanced type of ratio where people can expect, for the most part, positive things to occur, but occasionally some negative thing that can be worked through problem solving and conflict management. Now, the next slide where it says top 3 motivators, you know that in the previous slide we talked about requirements. We need to have these kinds of things, but motivators are a little bit different. And in rank order, the top 3 are interesting work, appreciation for work well done, and feeling in about things. These are things that keep people motivated to move forward. Interesting work means that, I find this to be very useful, it's valuable, it's not only helping me, but it's also helping my organization, my peers, and so on. Appreciation for work is that we're not just getting lip service when it comes to recognition, that there is a sincere recognition that also builds loyalty. There is another book that's put out by the Harvard Business Review about team building. I think it's called Effective Teams, Harvard Business Review, in which one of the authors, and it's a series of articles in that book, focuses heavily on loyalty in the company, loyalty that has been that's generated by the relationships and behaviors and communication styles of the manager or the leader. And of course, feeling in about things, as long as people feel like they belong and they have some input, they will be more motivated to stick with the organization. So those are just some things that we can think about when it comes to motivators. The next slide says getting things done. If you force someone to do something you want without taking their point of view into consideration, then the impression that person is left with is how they will see you forever. You're stuck with it unless you deliberately change what you do in order to be seen differently. The bottom line here is that forcing people to do things, although we'll probably get some work done, will create some serious relationship problems later on, okay? That if you think about, I use Stephen Covey as kind of an example in some cases, but influencing, the way I see it, something that he said in his book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, was seek first to understand and then to be understood. Now, if you are a project manager and you need to establish a relationship with a person that's got resources that you need, a very effective approach to influence this person to maybe listen to your goals and your ideas and your agenda and maybe to get them to buy in is to actually not focus on you and what you need, but on what they do and what their priorities are, and establish a relationship that you're kind of concerned about what they do, and that at some point in time, maybe you and that person can work together and collaborate in the use of resources. So this even Covey quote of seek first to understand and then to be understood is a good practice in establishing solid relationships with people, which would also be helpful when there's a need to influence people to work with you on a particular item. The next slide, where it says getting things done, pushing, bullying, bludgeoning, or haranguing, do not work. Just like elephants, people remember the experience. If they have an impression of you as someone who is a bully, an authoritative person, you know, someone who really doesn't want to listen, just simply wants to tell, that impression that they have will last a very, very long time. Many of you have probably had that experience in the past working with managers that use that type of approach. Again, short-term results come out of that, but long-term, you run into some serious problems with your people that are reporting to you and people in the organization. So we don't recommend that kind of tactic in order to get things done. Influencing, the next slide, it says it's about understanding yourself and the effect or impact you have on others. So if you're going to influence people, you should pretty much have a good idea of how other people see you. One of the ways in which you can do that would be to consider getting some type of a 360-degree feedback or appraisal process where people can give you a genuine, honest evaluation of you from several different perspectives. In the 360-degree process, what you would do is you would basically participate in some questionnaires. One of the questionnaires would be answered by your immediate supervisor. One of them would be answered by your customers. One would be by your peers. One would be by any subordinates you have, and you also do one for yourself. And you get a complete 360-degree look at how you work with people, things that are positive, things that may be not so positive, and this readout will help you understand how you're working with people and the effect that you have on others, especially people that have very, very strong personalities and can, even without their awareness, create an environment where you intimidate people, and sometimes you don't even see that without getting that kind of feedback. It says, though it can on occasion be one way, the primary relationship is two-way, and it's about changing how others perceive you. Now, Fast Company magazine a few years ago put out an article about that very issue. How do others perceive you? How do you know how other people are looking at you and seeing you and assessing your behaviors? Anybody have any comments on that? Do you have any idea on how you can assess the perceptions that other people have of you, other than the very formal 360-degree process?
Well, you can see how they respond.
Any perspectives on that? How do you know that you are influencing correctly? Do you ask questions every once in a while? Are you like Mayor Koch from New York City, and every once in a while you say, "How am I doing?" Anybody have any comments on that?
Yes, you did. I actually asked them, what do you think? Does anybody disagree? I have to try to put a little humor in it and tell people that they can slap me if they think I'm wrong, and that tends to bring people out of the woodwork a little bit better.
Okay, yeah, and simply just ask, you know, how are things going? Can we make any changes anywhere? Anybody have any improvements? To give you an example of how that could work, and maybe in kind of a negative way, I had an experience where a particular boss addressed the group, thought he was doing a good job, and said to the folks during this meeting, his exact quote was, "I am absolutely, positively convinced that this is the way we should do it. What do you think?" Now, is that someone that is actually asking for your input, or how are they influencing you?
No, that person is not going to get any input.
No, not any input at all, because they have pretty much set the stage right up front. I'm basically telling you, I've already made up my mind. Me asking you for your input is simply a formality, but I already know what I'm going to do. That is not going to get you too far in terms of influencing. It'll just simply have people sit back in silence. So that's not the kind of approach we're looking for. But you might ask questions like, "I've been thinking about this. Does anybody have any ideas about it? We've been working on the same process for a while. Does anybody have a new idea?" Or simply, in some cases where people are very dominant, to simply remain silent and allow others to speak up. These are the kinds of things that can be done to help generate new ideas and influence people to maybe take another step towards the contribution of your team. Working with people, the next slide, it says, no matter how intelligent you are, no matter how technically savvy, nearly everything you accomplish in life requires the support and cooperation of others. There is pretty much nothing that we can do totally by ourselves. We need other people. We need the cooperation of other people to accomplish anything. Okay? And I know that there are some things that we don't need anybody help, but in general, in the business environment, in order to succeed, we do require some assistance and cooperation from other people. So the question then becomes, what are the crucial skills you need to build positive working relationships with everything? What are some of the skills that work for you or that most project managers would need in order to build those positive relationships? Anybody have any comments on that? Crucial skills that you personally need to build positive working relationships. How do you establish a positive relationship with someone?
Communication skills are crucial.
Right. Yeah, communication skills for sure. And in communications, we can break that down into several different levels. One of the things that will help you to build a positive working relationship with everyone, if we think about communications, would be listening skills. Okay? Think about it. How many of us are expert, excellent listeners? Is that something that we can claim that we are absolutely perfect at listening? Most of us would tend to believe that we try to be good listeners. We have developed bad habits like interrupting people while they're speaking, getting distracted, evaluating the person that's speaking to us, formulating a response before the other person has finished. We have to build very, very strong listening skills. A quick example of that would be, again, I'm going to use Fast Company magazine as an example. They have monthly articles in the past by what they call the corporate shrink. And this issue of listening came up with a corporate chair talking to a couple of CEOs, and the CEOs were interested in improving their ability to listen to their customers. And the corporate shrink said, well, you know, before you can improve listening to customers, you have to be able to listen to yourself. And the little test that was given there was he suggested that you sit quietly, all right, and you find a quiet place for a few minutes, sitting quietly, and think to yourself and count to yourself in your mind from 1 to 50. Now, the idea behind this is that as you count slowly from 1 to 50 in your mind, that each time another thought pops into your head and you start thinking about that other thought, you have to go back to 1 and then basically count again until you reach 50. Most people can get to about the number 10 or maybe 15 before they realize that they've had maybe a dozen other thoughts get in the way of their counting before they even realized it. And this corporate shrink is saying, if you cannot listen to yourself, how could you possibly listen to anyone else? When you can get to this point of your count to 50 and you are able to listen to yourself counting and you get there without dealing with any of these other thoughts that, basically pop into your mind, he says, now you're ready to listen to other people. So you may want to give that a try sometime. When you have a few minutes, maybe you're riding a train to work, maybe you are have a quiet time in your office, try counting from 1 to 50 in your mind very slowly, and you'll see what I mean, that within a minute or so, get up to about the number 15, you will have thought about several different things, and then you'll have to start back from 1 again. It's kind of an interesting thing. So communication skills is critical. Listening skills is extremely critical. Understanding other people's points of view before you provide solutions and things like that, those are things that will help to build a positive relationship. The next slide, influential people in your life. Now, this is a self-reflection type of an exercise, reflecting on basically your business or your personal life. You have to ask yourself, who has had the most profound influence on you? Okay, now just think about that for a minute. Think of people in your business life, your personal life, who have a significant influence on you as an individual. And then think about the characteristics of those people. How did they influence you? What are some of the things that these people did or said or behave in the way they behaved that actually influenced you? So give that just a thought or two. And does anybody want to share on some of these characteristics? Think about that person. I'm not really interested in the name of the person or who that person was, but the characteristics of that person. What caused them to influence you? What caused that feeling of influence? Anybody want to share anything on that? Could have been a boss. Could have been a peer. Could have been a person that worked for you. Could have been a customer. Could have been someone you really didn't know all that well, but they may have done something that influenced you. If you look at the next slide, influential people in your life, characteristics.
And down goes Frank again.
What was the problem last time? Because I cut out for a while there to call him. Did he just get lost and come back again while I was on?
Yeah, he said his line just dropped before, and looks like it must have happened again.
Well, thank you for being patient, everyone. I'm happy for the people that have jumped in and answered his questions.
Okay, the call dropped again on me, but I'm back.
Sorry about that, Frank.
Okay, so anyway, we're on influential people characteristics. If you look at some of the items on the slide, strong beliefs, optimism, courage, they're prepared, they're confident, they have passion, vision, knowledge champion. One that's kind of interesting, use of a systematic process and frameworks. The power of visualization. Many of us are actually influenced by people who can articulate their vision and how pieces and parts come together to basically form something in the future that they're looking to accomplish. Interaction, innovation, things like that. These are all things that people who are influential, actually these characteristics that can influence us. One on the bottom there that's kind of interesting, business savvy. Many of us, especially project managers, focus on people who really have a very, very broad understanding of business from a financial perspective, a strategic management perspective, and a leadership perspective. So these are just some of the skills or some of the characteristics, rather, of people who are influential in our lives. If we think about teams, some of us have actually worked on teams that have made a difference in our personal lives. If you ask yourself the question, so think about high-performing teams in your life that you have been a part of that have inspired you and influenced your behavior. The question becomes, what makes a team a high-performing team? How has this team or the team leader influenced you? Okay, how do the team members interact? if you can think about that, as a team member, has anybody been on a team where you were extremely pleased with the team, proud of the team, and actually regretted it when the team was finally finished with their job and dissolved and people moved on? Anybody want to share maybe an experience about a team that was just that significant in your life? Doesn't have to be a project team. Could be a, you know, a sports team of some kind, anything like that. But some of us have had experiences where we've dealt with people and teams that have been very inspiring, and it was very, very kind of almost painful to see the team end and people go their separate ways. Anybody feel like that? Has anybody had that kind of experience? Okay, so I'm going to assume that maybe you have experiences that you don't want to share, but I'm hoping that you've been on a team or two somewhere where you've actually had a very, very valuable experience and learned some things from that team. If you look at the next slide, characteristics of high-performing teams, things like common purpose, balancing between task and process, all of the team members being involved, a respect for diversity, the understanding and importance of interdependence, being honest and having honest and regular critique, not negative critique, but honest and regular critique, dialogue instead of debate. I've been on a few different teams. I can actually attest to when I was in the Army, I had some experiences in working with the Navy SEALs. And I can tell you that I don't know if I can find a better example of a high-performing team than the Navy SEALs. They have a common mission. They are well-trained. They support each other. Each team member knows that the other person is protecting their back. They make a very, very formidable team, and they're very, very proud. That's just one example of a high-performing team. I've had project teams that were... I felt bad when the team was dissolved because the project was over, because it was such a great group of people who were very respectful of each other and worked together as a team to accomplish their goals instead of working as individuals. So think about that, and think about teams that you've worked on. And if you're not getting that kind of feeling, you should be asking yourself, well, what can I do to actually create that high-performing team? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, there's something that's not here that I thought of, which is that they have fun together.
Absolutely, okay. There's no question about it. Fun probably should be on there. It's not an all-inclusive list, but teams that have fun every once in a while, you kind of relax a little bit. And by the way, a team that has fun, if I get back to the book by Gary Fellers just for a minute, not only does he focus on something called the PNR, the positive-negative ratio, but he also focuses on something called present-mindedness. And if you're working on a team in which you are very relaxed and that there are going to be moments when there is no stress and you can actually achieve this moment in time called present-mindedness, this is a state of kind of relaxation where the stress has been removed, and the team, by having this fun, opens up their creative minds and can actually come up with some brilliant ideas simply because your minds are at ease and allowing any ideas that have been incubating in your mind for days to actually come out. A quick example of present-mindedness would be we are caught up in this issue of daily stress, project issues, sponsor issues, customer issues, and things like that. But if you think about it, when you're in a situation where you're kind of relaxed, and I'll just use an example. If you're it's in the morning, you're getting ready to go to work, and you're in the shower. You're taking a nice, warm shower. You're feeling really pretty good, and the troubles of the world seem to kind of be very, very separated at that moment in time. What happens is your brain relaxes, and ideas start to open up, those things that may have been, kind of incubating for a period of time. And many of you have probably had an experience where you came up with a $1 million idea, some brilliant idea. And you said, as soon as I get out of the shower, I'm going to write this down because I'm going to be able to use it and I'm going to be very successful. You finish the shower, you get out there, you start getting ready for work. What happened to your idea? You forgot it, right? Now, another example of present-mindedness. Okay, you are meeting with a person and you are talking to this person for a few minutes and you just cannot remember this person's name, although you have talked to this person several times before and you should know it, and it's on the tip of your tongue, and you can't think of this person's name. After the conversation, you kind of walk away, maybe 10, 15 minutes later, you may be slightly distracted, maybe you're thinking about something else, and all of a sudden you go, George, that was his name. Those are examples of present-mindedness. For a moment, you're letting go of the stress of the past, the anticipation of the future. At a particular moment, your mind says, okay, I can organize this, and there's the information that you're looking for. So having fun gives you this opportunity to achieve this state of present-mindedness in which you can become very spontaneous and creative. And what we need are teams that are very creative in what they do, and we get that creativity through sometimes having fun. If we look at the next one, influence defined, the ability to persuade, convince, or impact others in a way that will cause or motivate people to support your vision, your goals, objectives, or your personal agenda. That's what we have to do. As project managers, we have to get people to be convinced that our idea and our personal agenda is something that they should be working on, okay? So we have to really put some thought into that. We have to make sure that we think about how to get others to help us accomplish our goal. We need to think about what we are seeking to accomplish and our audience and how we will plan to influence. So we actually have to plan to influence people. Okay, now this next slide, the assumptions of influence. Okay, it's basically, as it says here, a desire to have a specific impact or an effect on others where you have a set of goals or mission and you want them to accept and commit to that mission. So when it says when forming a team or becoming a part of a team, why are first impressions so important? Anyone have a comment on the importance of first impressions, especially the project manager assuming control of a team?
Frank, Henry, I'll chime in. I think that, a lot of times if you have a first impression that's inconsistent with your personality, it might take a while for you to overcome that initial impression because it sticks with people for a while, especially if you have a team meeting and then, those people get together after the meeting and they talk about it and they form, let's say, a negative first impression. That can be pretty well grounded in that team before the next time you even get a chance to talk to the people.
Exactly right. If you are, if you approach your team in a certain way, maybe you're putting up a facade, maybe you're not acting in a way that you're normally comfortable with, if you're not showing confidence, those first impressions will stick with you for an extremely long time, and that can be very, very burdensome going forward. And it's very difficult to make a second first impression. So it's really important to plan out how you're going to deal with people, and find out as much as you can about people before you meet with them so that you can understand what their hot buttons are, understand what their level of comfort is regarding topics, what their intellect level is, what their subject matter expertise is, and things like that, and not to presume that you know how to deal with those people. So it's very important when you're thinking about those first impressions. Next slide says your agenda, vision, goal, and objectives. You have to be asking yourselves questions like, what is it that am I planning to accomplish? What is my specific need? And then you have to ask yourself, why is this important? One of the things that we find about influencing people is that we have to truly commit and believe in what we're doing is important so that we can actually help other people to kind of come over to our side. In order to influence a person or a group to buy into a agenda, there's two parts here, basically. There's you sending the message, and then there's the audience, the person or a group of people that you are attempting to influence. If you go to the next slide, it says, ask yourself, what actions can you personally take that will assist you in determining the most effective approach to influencing people to commit to your objectives? So we're not talking about the actual act of influencing, but you have to take some actions in order to be successful at influencing. And part of that really is to make sure you know your audience. Maybe do some informal meetings and discussions to try to fully understand. We'll go back to Stephen Covey for a minute. Seek first to understand and then to be understood. instead of coming up to someone and say, look, I'm going to need those resources that you had to work on my project, and I'm going to need them by tomorrow. That approach to a person is certainly not going to have them warm up to you because you have a specific need. You know, some people will look at yours and say, you know, take a number. I got other priorities. But if you actually take the time and sit down and ask very pertinent questions about what that other person believes to be important, what that other person's priorities are, then you're establishing this relationship that you do actually care and understand about what's important to them, and that you're not going to impose things on them, but you're going to ask to work with them. Okay, so it's very important to plan out your strategies for how you are going to influence people. Now, as we move forward in the slides, it says successful influence is based on credibility, communication, and empathy. Right? If we go to the next slide, which is slide 24, it's important to remember that the formula for success in influencing and team building reflects not on what you think about your expertise or the trust you believe you inspire in others, but the way the other person perceives your level of experience and whether or not they should trust you. So you have to establish credibility by basically showing people, I know what I'm talking about, I'm very confident in what I know, that I'm willing to listen to you, that I am not going to put up a facade, that I'm going to maintain a certain level of integrity that's not going to change, and I'm going to use that as leverage in helping to influence other people. Okay, if you look at the next slide on credibility, it's actually a combination of things. Trust. You have to be consistent in order for people to trust you. You have to be honest and upfront. You can't just tell half-truths and leave out, you know, convenient information that may not be, you know, information that's popular. Consideration. What others believe to be important is something that you need to take into consideration. Ask yourself, what actions can you take to improve your ability to understand the other person? Some of us could be better listeners. Some of us really are good at telling rather than listening. Consistency. If you are going to change your style depending on who you are talking to, that is going to create a problem in your credibility. And we know what that's like. You might be using one set of behaviors to talk to your peers, and then you have a completely different set of behaviors when you're dealing with a CEO. And people will see that. You know, we have to show consistency in regardless of who we're happen to be speaking to at the time. Do we change your style depending on who you're speaking with? Does your voice inflection change when the manager walks into the room or a CEO or something like that? Does your posture change? These are the kinds of things that other people actually notice. You should be demonstrating your skills and knowledge. And I'm not saying to overpower people with it, but to show people that you do know what it is you're talking about, that you do have certain skills that would be beneficial and useful, and that you're confident in the use of those skills. The last item there says make a list of your strongest skills and knowledge areas. There are some things that you personally do extremely well, and those are the things that you want to focus building on. There's a kind of a philosophy out there that if you identify weak areas, you should spend a lot of time developing the weak areas. But on the other side of that, many of the experts say that if you have strong skills, you should continue to develop your strong skills because that's where you're going to get the biggest payback rather than trying to shore up a weak skill that you'll never be actually very good at. So focus on those things that are strongest and those areas of knowledge that are most important and that you have the greatest information about. The next quote there by T.S. Matthews says, communication is something so simple and difficult that we can never put it into simple words. Communication is far more complicated than simply the word itself. Communication involves listening, it involves speaking, it involves writing, it involves understanding. It's about assessing problems and managing to come to solution. It's about collaboration. It's a number of things. It's also clearly stating what's on your mind. Here's a quote that I picked up many years ago in a training program, and it's still it kind of reflects on the importance of communication. The quote is, I know you think you understand what you thought I said, but what you don't understand is that what I said was not exactly what I meant. Now, if you think about that for just a minute, we are sometimes caught in a situation where we are trying to explain things to people, but how we are explaining things and what we are telling people is not really what we want them to hear or to understand. So it makes it a little bit difficult. Here's another example, a communications issue. And this comes from a different class, but the quote is, "The trouble with management is that they spend more time listening to what they are about to say than what is being said to them." And the idea here is, if you are coming up with or formulating a response while the person is still speaking to you, you cannot possibly be listening, and therefore there's going to be a breakdown in communications. So communications becomes a very important factor, and there's a lot of aspects of communication. The next slide on communication, clarity. You have to ask yourself, how well do you communicate? How do you know that your message was received in the way that you intended it to be? What can you do to ensure that? Leadership responsibility. Okay, remove barriers. There are many barriers to communication out there. The barriers to communication include anything from gender to age to cultural differences to technology differences to ego, stress, a number of different things. We have to understand what those barriers are so we can find ways to break them down. The item here on the bullet item, it says, list the typical barriers to communication that you experience while working on a project or within a team. Okay, what actions can be taken to remove these barriers? If you think about it, there are lots and lots of barriers out there. It's language, it's listening, it's clearly stated objectives, it's just a number of things. Anybody have a particular example of a barrier to communication that you're facing that you'd like to share with the group?
Yeah, this is Dana. One I run into every now and again is certain individuals feel they have to be the funnel for all communications of a certain type, as opposed to doing a more broadcast type of communication. And what I try to do when I see that is I try to work with the individual to find out exactly why they feel they need to be the funnel, and they're not losing any particular power or influence if they allow others to provide those same or similar types of communication, and it, for the most part, it tends to work.
Okay, sounds like a good plan to deal with. There are some people who are uncomfortable or resist communication that might come from other people. They feel that they have a certain tie to that area, and they don't want to let go. So sometimes, you have to work with them and get them to understand that. There are a lot of different
things.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, sometimes there's over-communication, and people are getting information that they don't necessarily need that may be distracting them from their work at hand, which I think sometimes, just as a counter to what was just said, which I certainly understand, sometimes folks that are a funnel are doing that to try to, quote-unquote, protect the team from over-communication.
And that's a good point. We do live in an age of extreme communication, and we're inundated with it, and therefore it is important to moderate that communication sometimes and think about, what is really important. We kind of maybe tend to have meetings that we don't necessarily need to have. We sometimes use email in the wrong way, which can create some problems. So we can over-communicate. We can provide information that might be useful to a small group of people, and yet we give it to everybody. We CC people on memos that we shouldn't really CC for whatever reason. So you're absolutely right. We have to find ways to moderate the type of communication that we send, because it gets to a point where it becomes a burden and it causes a breakdown. Next slide, it says, how effectively do you transmit your message to the receiver? We have this RNA, rejection of the message, neutral, and acceptance. How often is our message rejected? How often is the message neutral, where, there's no actual positive response to it? The question is, how can you improve your message accuracy? How often do you hit the target? When you're communicating, what percentage of the message do you think hits the target? We have to think about all these things because they're very important in the whole communications process. When you don't hit the target, what does that mean? There are consequences to not hitting your target. So we have to continuously check and see and determine ways in which we can improve our communication. Next slide there talks about three major elements of an effectively prepared message. What information are you planning to share? How is the information prepared? And what is the desired response? So think about that. And the three B's of effective communications, I learned this from a fundraiser session that I went to. My daughter is involved in a program where she helps people, kids that have dropped out of school, come back and get their GED. The organization in New York City is called the New York Center for Interpersonal Development. And one of the successful students from this program was asked to talk about the program at a fundraiser. And this person came up, a 17-year-old young boy, and very, very, you know, well-dressed and well-spoken, and simply said these three things that really kind of captivated the audience. He said he was going to follow the three B's of effective communication. He said, I will be brief, I will be specific, and I will be seated. And I actually thought that he made that up. I thought that, well, what a creative kid. And until recently, I always believed that this 17-year-old high school dropout that went and got his GED created those three B's, and I found out recently that it was from FDR. Franklin Delano Roosevelt actually said those things. But I gave that kid a lot of credit for taking the time going up there and saying that, and he pretty much captured the audience with those very, very simple rules of communication. The next slide there talks about one view of transmitting and receiving messages. If you look at it, method of delivery in person, you see body language makes up quite a bit of the message. Voice tone makes up a fair amount of the message, and the words only a very small part. If we go to email, there is no body language, there is no tone, there are only words. And you have to realize that your email message, the tone of that message is not put in there by you. It's put in there by the person who is reading your message. And how you construct those sentences and you construct those paragraphs and send that message can have a major impact on how you influence the person at the other end. If we look at the next slide, empathy, the tips for expressing empathy. First of all, listen actively. Listen to what people are saying. Okay, understand what it says here, the unspoken. Now, this gets into a little bit of emotional intelligence, looking at body language, looking at the expressions on their faces, and kind of seeing a little bit about the emotions associated with what people are feeling, and being able to translate that and understand that and use that to help to influence people. Address your feelings before you act. Okay, make sure that you understand that maybe this person's had a bad day. Maybe something happened at home that created an emotional burden. Make sure we can address that before we take action on something which could be very damaging. Okay, and also be sincere and also truthful and follow through on any time that you are suggesting some kind of course of action. Okay, your team members will constantly check your sincerity. And I think you understand what that means. The next slide, organizational awareness. The idea behind this is that in order to influence people, you should have a pretty good idea of what each department in your organization is doing, and what their important areas are, what your goals are, what their goals are, and line things up. Names of the lines of business departments or other business components that you may affect or affect your responsibility. How do you interface with them? How do you affect these components? Do you know what they do? I learned a lesson a long time ago when I was working on a major project for AT&T, and we were gathering requirements. And organizational awareness kind of plays into that because during the process, we were telling them how we were going to gather requirements. And one of the division managers said to me as the project manager, something I will never forget, he said, shouldn't you get to know us a little bit and understand what our mission critical issues are before you try to ask us questions about our requirements? So the idea here is that you should really know who who you're talking to, spend a little bit of time. Really understand the organization and what's important to them. One mission, one organization, which might be an operations department that has a 7-day-a-week, 24-hour-day operation, is going to have a very different mission and set of objectives than a sales organization that might work Monday through Friday and have the weekends off. So we have to be aware of that. If you look at the next slide, engaging team members. Okay, these are some practical things that we've learned that can help to get your team members engaged. Some of them you might be familiar with, identify common ground, mutual benefits, things that we have done in the past that we know about that are similar. Ask for input. Ask them, what do you think? What can we change? What are your concerns? How can we affect the team, the project? You know, get some input. Demonstrate your personal commitment. Tell them why it's important to you. Be prepared to answer the what's in it for you question and what's in it for me question. Most people focus, number one, on themselves with the WIIFM, what's in it for me. You need to understand that that's where they look. That's where their perspective is from. You know, why should I get involved in this? What value is it to me? So we have to kind of look at, well, I'm going to get something out of it, but you're going to get something out of it too. And, of course, to listen actively, displaying genuine interest, ask questions. Make sure that you have made a connection when it comes to listening to people. Obtaining and buying buy-in and commitment. This is slide 34. Proposing and recommending. Okay, what is the mission objective and how can this mission objective be accomplished? Tell people what's on your mind, what this clear mission or objective is. Why is it necessary? And give some examples, like we're going to improve service or customer satisfaction, and save money, improve our profit, whatever it is. State your expectations clearly and intentionally. Okay, what is needed, why it's needed, who's going to need it, when. People need to know these things, and they need to know them clearly. Opportunities and consequences. If we don't do this, what will happen? If we do this and we're successful, what will happen? What are the rewards, the penalties? People should be aware of these things when you're trying to obtain the commitment and influence people to work with you. Next slide, the 9 rules to improve any relationship. Just a couple of things to think about. Show genuine enthusiasm. Show respect. Be supportive. Give the individual or team the benefit of the doubt. Okay, if a problem did come up, you may not want to jump to the conclusion that they did something intentionally to cause a problem. Maybe you want to investigate first. Give the individual or team a chance to contribute as much as possible. Sometimes it's important for you to let people go and do things which will actually create an influence for you, because people will feel that they've been given a certain amount of freedom. Let people know that you appreciate them. If a problem develops and you get angry, you might want to wait a little while before you actually respond and confront the issue. Talk up front and be honest about things that are on your mind, and share yourself and trust with the individual or team. Make sure, and this it depends on the type of relationship and the team, but in general, you should basically be honest with the people up front, share some things about yourself, and create that trust. The next few slides are quotes on leadership. This is actually from a person that I graduated from the PMI Leadership Master's class. A 5-year-old defines leadership. Leadership is like follow the leader. You follow someone until they do something really stupid, and then you follow someone else. And that little quote came from a 5-year-old, and if you think about it, there's a lot of wisdom in that 5-year-old's quote. You know, another thing that I put together here, leadership and management, these acronyms, I was writing these things down on a plane when I was flying somewhere, and I wanted to emphasize the difference between manager and leader. And in some cases, the manager, if you look at that acronym, says, my actions never actually generate enthusiastic response. And the leader is the likable, energetic attitude deserving everyone's respect. And I ask people, so what would you rather be, a manager or a leader? Now, of course, I don't want to make it seem that managers are bad. I'm just saying that we do have situations where managers can get into a very oppressive type of role. They're very authoritative and autocratic, and therefore create these types of problems, whereas the leader creates a feeling of, you know, team, vision, moving forward, loyalty, and so on. Another thing, teams. Would you rather be on a team where you are eventually accepted, it says they eventually accept me, or a team that is terrific experience among members? What kind of team do you want to be on? I kind of lean towards the terrific experience. In the next slide, leadership and management and project management, these are the definitions from the PMBOK, establishing direction, aligning people, communicating by words and deeds, and then motivating and inspiring. By the way, just another side reference, if you do a Google search on the WOW project, if you simply type in WOW project, you will get a couple of interesting resources, including a website for Tom Peters, where he talks about techniques for you to create a WOW project, how to influence your team, how to create that enthusiasm that you need to drive towards success. It's actually very interesting and worth looking into. So take a look at the WOW project suggestions of Tom Peters. This is a quote by James P. Lewis. It is followers, not organizations, that convey leadership. And before people will allow you to lead them, you must understand what they want from you and what they expect from you. So you have to establish credibility, honesty, vision, confidence, a number of those things that we talked about in slides earlier. James P. Lewis has written several books on project management that are available in the PMI bookstore. Just to finish up here on leadership, what we want to do is we want to get people and mobilize people to want to do. Instead of giving orders, we want people to kind of buy in. There's a big difference between gaining commitment and commanding obedience, and it's really a lot to do with our own personal behaviors. Okay. If you get an opportunity, you may want to read the book, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership by John C. Maxwell, and this is slide 42. The law of connection, which is law number 10, you can't move people to act to action unless
you
first...
Thank you.
Once you first move them with emotion. That is an excellent book with a lot of very, very useful information in there. So I would suggest if you have an opportunity, pick up that book and read through the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. It's just excellent. John C. Maxwell's got a number of books out on leadership that would be worth looking into. Kind of reaching the conclusion here, there is the dark side of leadership, force, punishment, fear, my way or the highway. If I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. That's a kind of a famous New York quote amongst the workers out there. But we can lead people through threats and punishment. If you look at the very beginning of the movie Star Wars Return of the Jedi, and you take a look at the video of Darth Vader talking to the project manager for the Death Star, you will get a real sense of what I mean by the dark side of leadership, with fear is used as a way of motivation. And it's very interesting to kind of see that. It's kind of humorous in a way, but it's also realistic in terms of the kind of behavior that's displayed there. On the positive side, the focus would be on the needs of the organization, making the right decisions, understanding the impact of a decision, the impact of your stakeholders, and staying away from things like your own personal interests, ego, and the effect of politics. Okay, to wrap up, think about your own personal influence action plan. You have to ask yourself questions like, how can I consistently influence people in my organization? What specific activities can I do? I will do this by a certain date. I can improve my ability to influence by. So these are questions that you can ask yourself to help develop a strategy for improving.
Would be the thing, right about.
All right. We need somebody to do a star six to mute your phones, or Henry do something to put us back in lecture mode, I think.
Yeah, I think that we can just leave it the way it is, and if somebody needs to talk, just like Dana said, you just press star six and should be able to share. should be
able to. Well, it wasn't talking. We had a problem with someone had television on in the background, so. Okay. Go ahead, Frank.
Okay, just to wrap up here. So think about your own personal action plan. What can you do to improve how you influence people? Take a good, solid look at your own personal behaviors. Maybe find a mentor, someone that you trust, that you respect. Sit down and have a one-on-one discussion about areas that you might work on to improve how you influence people. The international project environment is something that we need to be aware of. If you take a look at the slide, there are a lot of things that go on in terms of influence. There's information management, geography, methods, religion, language, culture, customs, constraints, a number of different things that are factors in managing projects effectively and how we influence other people. So kind of keep the international environment in mind when you're thinking about your strategies. And also keep in mind that International Project Management Day is 5 November 2009. International Project Management Day is the first Thursday of November every year. This happens to be the fifth anniversary of International Project Management Day. It does get bigger and bigger every year. We've got governors and mayors that are proclaiming the day. Mayor Bloomberg in New York City proclaims it every year. We've got chapters around the world, organizations that are taking the time to have special events to recognize the project managers and project teams. There are a number of things that you can do to celebrate the day individually, organizationally. They're on that slide, just next to the last slide. Internationally, you can host a webinar. There will be a series of webinars coming up leading up to International Project Management Day. You can get information at www.internationalpmday.org, and we'll be gearing up for 2009. You'll see some information from past International Project Management Days on that website, and we'll be adding more information going forward. So one last thought. It says goals give you go, and success is like a train. Getting started is the toughest part of the trip. Once you get up to speed, you will be hard to stop. So I hope you enjoyed the presentation. There's a lot of information in there. Most of the slides you can probably use as a good reference and certainly can add to it. But with that, Henry, I'll turn that back over to you. Are you there, Henry? Okay. Anybody else there?
Yeah, Dana's here. Obviously, Henry stepped away for a moment for one thing or another. He was there a moment ago, I know, so we heard his voice.
Okay.
Well, thanks a lot for doing this, Frank. Really appreciate it. There was a lot of good insights there, a lot of different things. And also thank you for doing International Project Manager Day and Project Management Day as well. I actually participated in the one last year when I first heard about it, and I'm looking forward to doing it again.
Well, I hope other people get involved, and thank you for your support there. What my mission is to just get the information out there and let people know that the day it does exist. It is a... anybody, anything, send a thank you to someone, give them a card, take them out to coffee, buy them lunch, buy something for your project team like donuts and coffee during a project meeting or something like that. But just take a minute and say thanks. Recognition is extremely important to project managers and project teams. Okay. Any other comments out there? Hopefully some of this information was useful.
Yes, it was. Thank you very much.
Okay, and it is available on the website in a PDF format. And if you have any suggestions, I think my email...
it was on the first slide, I believe, Frank. Yeah. Oops, Frank, go away now, too. Third time is the charm here.
Yeah, I think I'm going to sign off. Good night.
Yeah, Henry, you with us again? You with us still? Yeah, it looks like we're winding down for the night then, folks. If no one has anything else, why don't we call it a night?
Great.
And,
thank you very much. Very informative. Thanks
yeah,
a lot.
We're reminding everyone that next Thursday is the larger group meeting, so please join us next Thursday, same time, same place, for the larger PM Lessons Learned group meeting where you get to voice anything you want to see, anything you want to do for the PM Lessons Learned community so you too can give back to the project management community.
Thank you. It was great. Enjoy the weekend. Have fun. Bye. Okay. Thank you.
Have a good holiday.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Also, I'd like to suggest for you, those of you listening in on the podcast, please join our Yahoo group. You can find details of that on our website. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. God bless you all. And as I usually say, keep on learning.
This has been a PM Lessons Learned podcast. Project Managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Come join our group. Visit our website at pmlessonslearned.com. Till next time, keep on learning.